What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series.
The Quantum Duality of Andrew Smith. A Full Circle essay by Tony Green, 38, Oxford, United Kingdom. When Miss Fall comes. The swirling grey vapours cause the dark of the early winter morning to seem like the beginning of dawn. It clung to and caressed the trees and grass with a million icy fingers which never quite withdrew their grip. The world was like a ghost of itself in the fog which covered everything and held it in silence. As the dark, anorak-clad figure moved through it, it seemed to part around him, as if in respectful silence. The gesture was ignored as the boy walked on, quietly muttering to himself. One of the finest lines ever written in British cinema appears in the film Clockwise. Faced with the final realisation that his dreams may not be fulfilled, John Cleese's character finally succumbs to despair and rages. It's not the failure. I can live with the failure. It's the hope. I've never had my life summed up better. The torture of any situation, be it failing exams, looking for the perfect partner, or searching for a job, does not lie in the certainty of failing, but in the glimmer of hope that success might be just possible with a little more effort, a little more luck, or a few more tears. It's what keeps us going as a species. It's also what keeps us miserable. It's the true cruelty of the world we live in, and that's why Andrew Smith tortures me even today for one simple reason. He was a fan who'd written a Doctor Who story, and it had actually been made. Thus it was that I began every morning in the winter of 1989 working on my script. The 45-minute paper round was just a time to entirely focus my mind on my great project. I barely noticed the freezing fog or the weight of the bag. All this was lost on me because, as the mornings got darker and colder, I had better things to do. I was writing a Doctor Who story like Andrew Smith did, and it was going to be perfect, and it was going to be made. It drove me and obsessed me because Andrew Smith was living proof that everything I needed to achieve was possible. You just needed a good idea, a receptive production team, and a little hard work. It was that simple, and at the same time infinitely complex. Both reachable and so far beyond me it could make you weep. At one time or another, most fans have written Doctor Who stories, be it as scribbled drivel in a childhood exercise book or as a professionally presented and typed manuscript. It's something we fans do. Even those who never put pen to paper probably have had at least one good idea in their time. Maybe they forgot it almost immediately. Maybe getting it on paper was just pushed to the back of their minds ahead of other priorities such as jobs, children or the pub. Maybe they even typed it up lovingly and sent it to the production office only to receive a polite and encouraging sod-off letter. Whatever the manifestation or the level of action, we've done it. You can bet your last river fruit on it. This is why the Andrew Smith conundrum was and is so devastating. He was the one who did it all. It suddenly became a possibility, while at exactly the same time, it was as close to impossible as it could be. It was a physicist's nightmare. The impossible dancing a quantum tango with the possible and blowing the mind in the process. He is the X-Factor winner of Doctor Who fandom, and thus, regardless of talent, ability, or understanding of our own limitations, we continue to chase that dream. This is why I spent so many of my teenage years muttering to myself. I was running scenes, dialogue, and plot twists through my mind in order to make my own script another full circle. I just needed to work a little harder, tweak a bit here and there, trim this, expand that, and it would be ready. And I was so nearly there, and at the same time, not even close. Andrew Smith got his story made because it was good. It was a bright idea with a good plot, and well worth the time and investment spent by the production team. My story was not made because it sucked, and was essentially a remake of the War Games. And all those years of perfecting had come to nothing. All the hope was fruitless, and the work wasted. And all the time, Andrew Smith, in his castle of evil, felt my pain through the ages, and like Mr. Sin in a comfy jumper, he gave a smile. Even knowing this, though, I can't fully bring myself to resent him. I mean, at least trying to achieve what he did gave me something to do all those years ago, on those cold mornings on my paper round, when the mistfall came.
Hi, I'm JR.
And I'm Rob.
And you're listening to You and Who Talking. And this week, we've got a little bit of a first in that, well, one of the things that was obviously going to happen with this podcast is that people were going to send us more than one reading. And this week, you'll just have heard Tony Green, who you probably have heard 3 weeks ago.
That's right. I think it's good to break up the essays like this and mix them around. It gives you a sense of anticipation when you hear someone pop up again who you liked the first time around.
Yes, absolutely. So I kind of said to myself that in the first 10 episodes of this podcast, I wanted to kind of lay down the format of all the things that would be happening. So this week, although we didn't necessarily need to, I thought this week would be nice to make up a podcast of two voices that people have heard before so that they'd get used to the idea that people would be popping up again.
Exactly. And like last week's, this is another essay I found quite funny. Not quite in the same vein as last week's, but it is another funny essay. Tony's jealousy, I guess you could say, with regard to Andrew Smith.
Yeah, and the other thing about Tony is that he has this facility for coming up with a concept and then having a sort of understanding of his concept. So that he's got this dry sense of irony about it.
Yeah.
He gets, even though he's obviously involved fully in the things he's talking about in his essay, he has this really dry sense of irony where he can really make fun of himself.
Yeah.
But he's obviously, as you say, talking about something again that's universal with an awful lot of fans, something that they'll recognize.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so next, actually, we've got another essay from Lee Rawlings, who was on our third episode, if I remember rightly. He was the first voice other than you and I that people will have heard.
That's right. So welcome back, Lee.
And this week, he's talking about PS, which, if people don't remember, was the short online thing which went out in 2012 after Amy Pond and Rory left the series, where we got to find out how Rory's father discovered what had happened to his son and his daughter-in-law.
Yeah, this I stumbled across this. For some reason, people weren't really talking about it in my Who circle, and I just stumbled across it one day, and I thought, oh my God, this is, you know, it's a very simple storyboard animation with Arthur Darvill doing some narration.
That's
so
right,
simple,
yeah.
But so affecting, and Lee picks up on that and runs with it, and yeah, we try not to give too much away in our blurbs here, but oh gosh, it's good.
Yeah, Lee's essay takes the tone and the theme of PS and absolutely nails it. And I think his essay is a lovely compliment to the little episode itself.
It is indeed.
Yeah, so let's get on and let people hear it.
Alrighty.
Lest We Forget, PS, by Lee Rawlings, 41, Devon, UK. First story, The Robots of Death. The angels take Manhattan. Do they? Do they really? They seem to live in the area for a small period of time and steal away the odd human. But they don't really take Manhattan, do they? Personally, I think a more apt name for it would be the angels turn up for a few years and build a farm only to be stopped by suicidal livestock. What they do instead is take something a lot more precious. I am the father of two. I love my children with all my heart, and the idea of them leaving home fills me with sadness. What will the house feel like when they leave? All the noise they make in our house from their musical talents, laughter, and even the bickering would all be missed sorely and equally. But life goes on, and I suppose at least they would come home now and again, maybe with their own noisy families. The daughter will continue to sing and play guitar, and my son will whip me at Halo and Mario Kart, and I'm sure we will talk Doctor Who forever. More salad days are yet to come, maybe. Oh, by the way, wishes come true. They do. Anyone who says they don't probably doesn't believe in fairies or Father Christmas. The fools. When I watched this mid-season Moffat Scarefest, I was hoping for chills, incredible camera work and a great story. I got all of those, so my wishes came true. We also got an incredible leaving scene as the Ponds dramatically and suddenly left the series for good. So another good wish came true. Now Amy is finally out of the series. I mean, their departure was a great piece of writing and made me twinge a little in the eye department. But as the end titles finished, I felt cheated. I felt annoyed and saddened that a massive opportunity had passed the Grand Moff by. He forgot to add a coda. Brian has been my favourite older companion since the Indomitable Wilf, and I keep telling my friends that it would be great if they teamed up and did a Dad's Army Meets Torchwood, or Porchwood, on any future alien invaders. Brian has a heart and a soul, is a great dad, is down to earth and is pure comedy gold, being played to perfection by Mark Williams. So why, oh why, did we not see a small clip of Brian at the end of that episode, looking out of the window for the return of his son and daughter-in-law? In fact, in the Blue Box podcast episode where we reviewed this episode, I suggested a new scene. Remember Marty McFly in Back to the Future 2? There is a sublime science fiction moment where he receives a letter from the past which catapults him into a new adventure. Maybe Brian could receive a similar piece of post from Rory doing the opposite, as that would allow perfect closure for his character. I couldn't believe it. How could Stephen have missed this idea? I wished so hard that they might film this and at least put it on the DVD as an Easter egg. Well, it just so happens they did something to alleviate my grievance. A short storyboard animation appeared, with a voiceover on a website just a week later. My wish had come true. And it didn't matter that it wasn't properly filmed, even though it would have been shot beautifully. It didn't matter that it didn't have Mark Williams acting in it, even though he would have acted his trowel off to make it a gut-wrenching performance. It didn't matter because the feeling and atmosphere generated by these simple drawings, Arthur Darvill's voice and the sweeping music was enough to completely choke me. Imagine a fully grown 40-year-old man reduced to a quivering jelly with real tears welling up over a few scribbles and some words from a disembodied voice. It absolutely tore my heart out. So, after a season of short, sharp thumpers, including a Pepper Pot Nuthouse, Filch meets the Astrosaurs, the Yul Brennerator Crichtonesque Cowboyed Western, an invasion of the Innovations catalogue alarm clocks, and the return of Bok's naughty cousins, we get this heart-stopping gem that I would say is the best Doctor Who I've seen for years. And it wasn't even an episode. The idea of my son not only leaving me forever, but dying before I was born, never being able to see his smiling, laughing face alive again, is too much to bear. Brian must feel even worse as he sent them off with his blessing. Poor lonely man. I just hope that doctor bloke doesn't turn up and whisk my kids off, then lose them in the past, or I will personally find a cherub and hide it in his TARDIS console, and every time he starts the thing up, it would take him back to the past until he meets Adric over and over and over again. Actually, I wouldn't want to wish that upon anyone. So, do the angels take Manhattan? No, not really. But what they do take is a son away from his father, forever. What could be scarier than that? The genius of the angels isn't their incredible design or even their clever movement. It's the way they remove people you love for good, alive, in a time that is unreachable by both parties. That is a fantastic yet terrifying concept. And I doff to the Moff my emotional filled cap. Oh, and Mr. Moffat missed another trick that the editor of this book glibly rolled off his tongue one nerd-filled evening. It should have been called Angels in Harlem, he said with a side smile. Maybe. At least it wasn't a false promise hanging over a brilliant piece of television.
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.